Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, where we study the history of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Brent Topp, the chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University, and I am your host, and we are honored today to have with us Alex Smith, a historian with the Joseph Smith Papers Project within the Church History Department. He's an editor of the Nauvoo volumes in the journal series of the Joseph Smith Papers, the second volume of which will be released in fall of 2011. Alex, we're really, really glad to have you with us today as we begin talking about the Nauvoo period of church history.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Alex, as we talked in past episodes about Missouri and the extermination order and the saints leaving the state of Missouri and settling on the eastern side of the Mississippi River in Quincy, and they're there because of the goodness of the inhabitants of Quincy's hearts and welcoming them in, and for a short period of time they stay there until they're finding a place of their own. Why don't we talk about the home that the saints find there north of Quincy on the banks of the Mississippi? Tell us about the place called Commerce.
Certainly. Thank you. It's helpful to, when considering the church in Illinois and in Nauvoo, first Commerce and what would become Nauvoo, it's important to remember that when the saints moved into northern Missouri, I'm sure in past episodes we heard messages about how that was viewed as a temporary location for the saints until they could move back to their homes in Zion. But when they moved to Illinois and to the peninsula-like protrusion into the Mississippi River on which Nauvoo was eventually built, it was clear to them by that point that this would be a more permanent settlement for them and a place that they would need to build up their homes and their church, essentially their kingdom. It would become a new gathering place for them. And I love the opportunity to speak about Nauvoo. It's been an area of particular interest of mine for many years, and I'd like to take just a minute, if you don't mind, to explain why I think that this is a significant period of church history to get into. Even though the main body of the saints only lived in Nauvoo for roughly 6 or 7 years between 1839 and 1846, it was during a pivotal time for the organizational, social, political, and doctrinal developments in the church. It was in Nauvoo that important temple ceremonies were revealed, that baptisms for the dead were first performed, that the Relief Society was first organized, and that the Quorum of the Twelve became a more governing body of the central to the church. In Nauvoo, the saints found a temporary refuge within, for the first time, for their own chartered city, their own legislative body, their own court systems, their own complex and significant military organization. In Nauvoo, Joseph Smith spent the last years of his mortal life, so it's significant to us for that reason. He directed numerous affairs while living in Nauvoo, serving as mayor, as judge of both the mayor's court and chief justice of the municipal court, as a general of the legion, a shopkeeper, a real estate investor, a newspaper editor, a spiritual leader, hardly an end to the activities that he was involved with daily. And for many of the saints and for non-members alike, Nauvoo remains today a place that we can return to, and it's a destination where interested visitors can, in a very real way, walk the same streets and see some of the same buildings and structures and experience the setting where the saints once had a flourishing community. But to return to your question, a little bit of what the saints found when they arrived in the area, when they uh, the, as you mentioned, they had been driven from their homes in northern Missouri. In the winter of 1838 and 39, they stayed temporarily in Quincy and a few other places that we'll talk about a little later.
Some of the other settlements outside and sure. In homes and families and, yeah.
Anywhere they could, really, mm-hmm. to find an interim location before they could settle, eventually moving to the area where the towns of Commerce and Commerce City had been laid out. They moved roughly 50 miles north of Quincy up the river and found a location here that in the spring of 1839 on this peninsula overlooking the Mississippi. I would like to read a brief little note that made it into the draft minutes of the history of the church.
Sure. That
Joseph Smith describing what the area was like when he arrived, because it differs so radically from what we know Nauvoo is today. In the History of the Church entry for the 11th of June, 1839, it reads, "I commenced dictating my history for my clerk, James Mulholland, to write. About this time, Elder Theodore Turley raised the first house built by the saints in this place. When I made the purchase, there were one stone house, three frame houses, and two block houses, which constituted the whole city of Commerce. The place was literally a wilderness. The land was mostly covered with trees and bushes, and much of it so wet that it was with the utmost difficulty that a footman could get through and totally impassable for teams. Commerce was so unhealthy, very few could live there, but believing that it might become a healthy place by the blessing of heaven to the saints, and no more eligible place presenting itself, I considered it wisdom to make an attempt to build up a city." So he immediately recognizes the challenges of building a settlement here, largely wilderness, swampy with the health problems that entailed. Mm-hmm. And of course, the earliest years in Nauvoo before much of the land is drained, frequent cases of malaria and things like that are associated with the physical geography of the region, but also a place that they knew was land that they could build on, that they could build a home and clear timber and end up with an area that was largely livable. His description of the number of dwellings in the area was certainly conservative. Estimates according to land records show that the entire region there probably housed closer to 100 inhabitants. In 1979, in a BYU Studies Documents Corner article, T. Edgar Lyon noted that Amos Davis, one of the original inhabitants of the area, had kept a store account book for a store in Commerce, and it nicely describes the number of people that lived in the area and where some of them were located and that kind of thing. Some of the names that would become familiar in later Nauvoo history: Amos Davis, Hiram Kimball, Davidson Hibbard, and others were certainly there before the saints arrived. William and James White and others. So they did find a few local residents, some of whom they ended up buying their property from, and we can talk about that shortly. But it was largely a wilderness that they ended up in.
Why don't we continue talking about how they acquired and also developed this marshy, swampy, unhealthy land, as Joseph described it?
Certainly. Prior to moving to the Commerce area, when they held some conferences in March and in May of 1839 in Quincy, trying to determine not only where they would settle, but how they would settle the area of that would become Nauvoo. And between April and August of 1839, the church leaders, Joseph Smith and then Sidney Rigdon's son-in-law, George Robinson and others, purchased land on behalf of the church from a number of both residents of the area and land speculators back east, from Horace Hotchkiss, John Gillett, Smith Tuttle, Isaac Gallant, Hugh White, and others, between April and August of 1839. When the city was laid out, it was done with a grid plan similar to the plats that we had had in Far West and Independence. This area, this city would be built with roughly four acre blocks, and it incorporated the older settlements of Commerce and Commerce City, which were located on the northwest edge of the what I'll call, for want of a better term, peninsula-like shape of land up along the Mississippi. The Saints, even though they relatively quickly started calling the area Nauvoo, the official name change did not occur until April 1840 with the official alteration of the name of the post office for the area. But the name of Nauvoo was explained in a letter by the First Presidency that was published in March 1841 in the Millennial Star, where they say the name of our city is of Hebrew origin and signifies a beautiful situation or place, carrying with it also the idea of rest. And certainly Nauvoo did become an area that for the Saints represented a place where they could rest, a break, at least for a time, from the chain of events of continual persecution that the Saints had experienced throughout their Missouri experience.
So. Yeah, that's great. And let's talk about some of the surrounding settlements there that were also involved in the moving of the Saints to the Nauvoo area.
When we talk about Nauvoo, we usually focus on the actual city of Nauvoo, where certainly the majority of the Saints dwelled. Right. But as you point out, there were obviously a lot of other settlements in the area that they lived in. The vast majority, actually, of the land purchases by the church in 1839 were on the Iowa Territory side of the Mississippi River. And while Nauvoo was the center of the population density, only a small fraction of the land purchased was in Illinois. And usually we think of the Saints being there, but numerous branches of the church and even stakes were created in the Illinois and Iowa Territory regions. 9 stakes at one point in Lima, Ramis, Knowlton, Quincy, Freedom, Pleasantville, La Harpe, Springfield, Zarahemla, and Nauvoo. And to talk about just a few of those, one of the earliest developments was across the river over in the Montrose Township, where we end up with the stake eventually of Zarahemla. In October of 1839, the same conference that divided Nauvoo into 3 wards, which incidentally was the first time that political terminology was used to describe an ecclesiastical unit in the church.
Yeah, the word ward. Yeah.
The local units. At that same conference, it was decided to create a branch of the church on the opposite side of the river in Montrose, Lee County. And Joseph Smith's uncle, John Smith, was president there. Beginning with the settling in May 1839, by October, there were enough Saints that the Iowa, at the time, stake was organized, later renamed the Zarahemla stake.
Yeah, I think it's really important to note there with regards to Montrose, with the much of the leadership of the church was on that side of the river. Brigham Young's living on that side of the river, and many of the things that we talk about in the history of the church, some of the great events. I think some members of the church forget that it wasn't right in Nauvoo proper, but right across the river there. So
certainly, and not only the Montrose area, but a little further up the river, for instance, in the area of Keokuk, when the Saints were first driven out of Missouri. Many settled during that first winter in Keokuk, and a branch was there. But then again, by August of 1841, only roughly 2 years later, there were only a handful of Saints, 13 members of the church living in Keokuk. So, and the remaining Saints that lived there were driven out by a vigilante committee later in 1843. But so, again, settling, moving eastward, but settling anywhere they could initially, right, and then centering their population more in Nauvoo. But in Quincy, you know, we talk about the Saints moving up from Quincy to Nauvoo, but many of the many Saints did stay there. A stake was organized there in October 1840.
In fact, one of the names very familiar to Latter-day Saints, Frederick G. Williams, stays in Quincy. So.
And remains there, yes, certainly. I would note just on the side, an ancestor of mine, actually, Frederick Williams. Uh-huh. But Lima, in Adams County, most of the Saints settled about 2.5 miles north of there in Isaac Morley's settlement called Yelrome. Mm-hmm. But a stake was organized there with 424 members of the church by the September 1841 conference. In Warren and Warsaw, a lot of incoming saints from England during this time. So not only do you have the displaced saints from Missouri, but we have a huge influx of European saints mm-hmm. Employment needs to be found for places for them to live. And so temporarily, some of them settle outside of Warsaw. We have saints settling in La Harpe and Shikok and Fountain Green. And then, of course, the church organizes a pinery operation up in Wisconsin. So, yeah, all sorts of areas for the saints to settle.
You're listening to Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We're talking with Alex Smith, a historian with the Joseph Smith Papers Project in the LDS Church History Department in Salt Lake City. Alex is very, very knowledgeable on Nauvoo and the Nauvoo period of church history. We've been talking about the founding of Nauvoo in the Commerce area and also the establishment of some of the outlying settlements and all of the saints coming in and having to provide land and farming opportunities and other kinds of things for them. And so even though there were settlements spread all around in that area, Alex, what did it mean to the saints to really have a focus that they could call their own city?
Well, for the first time, the saints really had a city of their own. And it was a real achievement for them when the act to incorporate the city of Nauvoo was signed by the Illinois governor at the time, Thomas Carlin, in December of 1840, to sign this charter giving them a city of their own, essentially a place where they could determine the laws by which they would be governed. They had certainly paid the price for having a lack of access to governmental authority in their behalf in Missouri and in Ohio, you know, to a certain extent. But finally here, when they move to Illinois, they and settle in Nauvoo, with the passage of the charter for their city, they are granted a number of rights and abilities to govern themselves and view themselves largely as a somewhat autonomous city within the state. And of course, that would later come to prove to be a problem in their relations with their neighbors, as they were viewed as having too much of their mm-hmm. own authority. But that can be discussed in later segments of the series. But when they did arrive in Nauvoo and had this, the charter itself was shepherded through the government by the first mayor of Nauvoo, John C. Bennett, one time member of the First Presidency of the Church, and it met with very little resistance by either the Whig or Democratic parties in Illinois, simply because both viewed the large influx of saints as a potential voting block that could mm-hmm. that could be won over to their side. So the charter was quickly passed. It was one of a number of charters of Illinois cities around the same time. Chicago had received a charter in 1837, and by the time Nauvoo's is granted in December of 1840, similar charters had been granted to the cities of Alton, Quincy, Springfield, Galena, which included a number of the same kinds of authorities and powers granted by Nauvoo's charter. So even though there was a fair bit of resistance later on to the Nauvoo charter, it's important to remember that the legal abilities and responsibilities that the Nauvoo's charter granted were certainly not unique. Mm-hmm. They were mirrored in many ways, language copied directly from some of these previous Illinois charters. But it was a deliberate attempt by the saints to codify their powers to protect them so that they would not have a repeat of the experiences that they had in northern Missouri, an opportunity finally to make the law work for them, mm-hmm. Really granted a great deal of power to the saints. And some of the specifics that the charter allowed. It allowed for a mayor's court, for a municipal court, for a city council that could craft their own ordinances and resolutions for the city of Nauvoo, so long as they weren't repugnant to the laws of the state and the country. But it also allowed for the creation of the Nauvoo Legion, which a subset of the Illinois militia, and also allowed them to create their charter for their own university in Nauvoo, mm-hmm. Showing that even early on, right as they're moving in, trying to find out where they will live, education is already viewed by them as important, mm-hmm. and that in spite of needing to make ends meet, that they also have interest in promoting the cultural and educational opportunities that their children would need and that they would need themselves. But the Nauvoo the Nauvoo Charter really was an organ to allow the saints an opportunity to govern themselves and something that they clung to tenaciously. When later talk in even as early as fall of 1842 of rescinding revoking Nauvoo's charter, the saints made it very clear that they viewed this as a virtually a God-given right document, you know, but in comparison to the previous experiences that they had of living in Ohio and Missouri and not necessarily being able to, well, either living in towns and cities already developed or among neighbors, or living in for instance, in Caldwell and Davies and Ray counties and areas that were set aside essentially for mm-hmm. them. Finally, here they have an area that they intend to turn into a longer term home and a place where they can govern themselves. But
Alex, as we talked about the meaning of having their own city and to be guided and directed by their own city charter, and I think it was really, really important that you identify for our listeners that a city charter was not just unique to the Latter-day Saints in the city of Nauvoo, that they were not being granted something that was totally different than what was being done elsewhere in the state. I think that's really important, as you pointed out, that it's going to become an issue later on in the history of Nauvoo. So we mentioned that Nauvoo is the new headquarters of the church, and the saints are really only there for 6 or 7 years. And the Revelations had identified Independence, Jackson County, Missouri, as Zion, as the center place, the establishment of Zion, and we have the Revelations that identify so many of the future things the Lord has in store for Zion. Well, how was Nauvoo considered in the context of how they felt about Jackson County, Missouri? And was it viewed as a new Zion? Was it replacing Jackson County? How did the saints view it?
Great questions. Thank you. The move into Nauvoo, kind of interesting the way they viewed the area that they were moving to. As you point out, Independence was still Zion. And so there's a little bit of a conflict of identity, because unlike the northern Missouri settlements of the church, it is now clear when we are moving into Illinois that the saints are going to be here for some time in Nauvoo. And yet, so it will be the central gathering place, but at the same time, independent, there is still an objective of returning to fulfill the revelation of locating the church in Zion in Independence. So even though Nauvoo becomes the central gathering place of the church for half a decade or so, it is still theologically temporary.
Okay.
And so they still organize a stake in Nauvoo, for instance. Mm-hmm. So if we use the tent metaphor, that the center of the church is still Zion, and the stakes that it supported are still the outlying areas. Mm-hmm. Nauvoo is a stake of the church, and so even though the first presidency is located there, the Quorum of the Twelve being sent out from there on missions, and the Nauvoo High Council, essentially a governing body of the church there, It is still a stake with a stake presidency, William Marks at the head, and understood as a as not Zion. But at the same time, I think here we maybe initially begin, I would argue, to come with the understanding that Zion is where the saints are, mm-hmm. are settled, this alternative definition of Zion.
Which is not much different than what we have today.
And certainly
if you
not.
Think about it theologically, we still adhere to those same revelations, and we have saints all over. They're more gathered centrally than perhaps we are today, but in reality, they're viewing it much the same way as we think of today. I think they're probably just thinking they were going back sooner than they did.
Absolutely. And sooner than maybe we think today.
Exactly. I think that's a good point as well. So
the on the other hand, there really was an emphasis of building Nauvoo as the gathering place rather than, you know, earlier we talked about some of the outlying settlements that the saints lived in. And even though saints did settle in those areas, there was some concern that there needed to be large enough population centers for the saints that they would mm-hmm. not be, ostracized. Exactly. And so, for instance, I would like to read from a fun little note from a letter. This was published in the Times and Seasons in December of 1841, but it's a response by church leaders, Joseph Smith, Brigham Young, and others, are responding to a letter from the leaders of the church back in Kirtland, who are saying, we still have a flourishing community of saints here, and yet we want to know what our instructions are. Should we all be coming out to Nauvoo? We've established a printing press here. We're trying to make a home here. And in this letter, in response, Joseph emphasizes the need for the saints to gather to Nauvoo, even though, as we mentioned a moment ago, it's still not Zion. He writes, as it appears that there are many in Kirtland who desire to remain there and build up that place, as you have made great exertions, according to your letter, to establish a printing press and take care of the poor, etc., since that period, you may as well continue operations according to your own design. So he allows mm-hmm. allows them to stay there. It says, and go on with your printing and do what you can in righteousness to build up Kirtland. But do not suffer yourselves to harbor the idea that Kirtland will rise on the ruins of Nauvoo. Mm-hmm. It is the privilege of brethren emigrating from any quarter to come to this place, and it is not right to attempt to persuade those who desire it to stop short.
That's a great statement.
So, really emphasizing the church is now located in Hancock County, and that's where the saints should move to. So to talk for just a minute about how long the saints anticipated staying there, some indicators of how they viewed this as a more permanent settlement. I think one of the most helpful documents that we have is the revelation that was received on the 19th of January, 1841, that is now canonized as Doctrine and Covenants, Section 124. It becomes, in a way, a religious charter to the settlement of Nauvoo in many ways, that the act to incorporate the city was the legal charter. It discusses the building of the temple, the building of the Nauvoo house. It gives specific instructions to particular members of the church leadership about how they should conduct themselves and what their responsibilities are. But by directing that a temple be built in Nauvoo, that did elevate the city to the status of a temple city and mm-hmm. all that entailed. Of course, this idea that we're at least going to be here long enough to build mm-hmm. a temple. And of course, later on after the martyrdom, there is this understanding that we, by revelation, we have been commanded to build a temple here, and we will of necessity remain here until that is done. And, you know, mm-hmm. and even this, essentially with one foot in Illinois and one foot on the move west, this understanding that the temple needed to be completed because it had been commanded of the Lord. But also the Nauvoo house in the same revelation, which usually receives certainly less attention, but this idea that we need a hotel not only as a residence for Joseph and his family, but where visiting dignitaries mm-hmm. and people can come to Nauvoo and learn about the church, and that we're going to be here long enough that, the constant feature of Nauvoo for visitors was the continual construction, you know, buildings going up everywhere. And the building of these great two edifices, members of the church identifying in their own journals and in records of the workmen that an amazing amount of time being spent building these structures, and an indication that the saints really did intend to be here in Nauvoo for some time.
Well, that's great. We have really enjoyed having Alex Smith with us as our guest today, and we'll be hearing from him in future episodes as we talk about the significant period of church history, the Nauvoo period. I'm Brent Topp, your host on Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thank you, and we look forward to having you join us in the future.